Ekatra Podcast Conversations for the Curious Essential Knowledge Simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Ekatra AI. Welcome back to the Deep Dive. Think about the last time you felt truly, profoundly seen by someone, not just heard, but really understood.
It's quite a feeling, isn't it? Powerful.
Yeah, it really is. And conversely, you know, that crushing feeling of being invisible or maybe reduced to just a label or simply ignored.
Well, that tension, that deep human desire to be seen, that's exactly what our deep dive is about today. Mm. We're cracking open David Brooks's really quite magnificent book, How to Know a Person.
Right.
And the sources we looked at, they all kind of confirm this isn't just, you know, polite self-help. It feels much more like a necessary manual for, well, for the fractured world we seem to be in.
Absolutely. Okay. I mean, we hear it all the time, don't we? Researchers calling this an epidemic of loneliness, of social fragmentation.
Yeah, the stats are pretty sobering.
I saw a survey recently. A staggering number of people reported feeling unseen or just invisible at work in their communities. It's everywhere.
So Brooks is really tackling a quantifiable societal crisis here. It's not just a feeling.
Definitely not. So our mission today seems pretty clear, right?
Yeah, I think it's straightforward. We're essentially extracting the concrete steps Brooks lays out. He argues these are learnable skills.
Learnable, that's key.
Totally. A shortcut, maybe, to mastering what he calls the art of deep human connection.
So if you're, say, prepping for a difficult conversation, or maybe leading a team, or honestly, just trying to feel a bit less isolated yourself,
then this deep dive should hopefully give you a roadmap.
Okay, let's start with the author then, David Brooks. Who is he, for those who might not know?
Sure. So he's a prominent Canadian-born American commentator, writes about politics and culture.
Right, the New York Times op-ed column, PBS NewsHour.
Right.
He's quite well known.
Exactly. And his early career was largely focused on politics, policy, that kind of cultural critique.
But he shifted, didn't he?
Yeah, and that's what's really interesting here. There was this pivot. Over the last decade or so, Brooks really shifted his focus almost entirely.
Towards what?
Towards questions of character, virtue, social cohesion, you know, deeper stuff, books like The Road to Character and The Second Mountain.
So given he comes from covering all that political polarization, why write a handbook on connection now? Was there like a specific trigger?
Oh, it seems he realized that those political divides he was writing about were maybe just symptoms.
Symptoms of something deeper.
Exactly. A deeper relational failure. And what makes him, I think, a particularly credible guide here is his vulnerability. He's quite open about it.
How so?
He writes from a place of earned wisdom, you could say.
Yeah.
He openly admits that he himself was often socially clumsy, that he failed to truly see others earlier in his career.
Oh, interesting.
So he's basically mapping out a journey he had to take himself,
mm-hmm.
which makes it feel more authentic, you know?
Yeah, I appreciate that blend. It's not just sociological theory. It's got that personal humility baked in. It links the big picture problem, polarization, to the micro problem of just how we talk to each other.
Precisely. And the book itself, it really presents itself as a practical handbook, also philosophical and even moral in a way.
For who, mainly?
Well, really for anyone feeling isolated or maybe just struggling to build those genuine bonds.
And the core argument, you mentioned it's about skills.
Right. The central argument couldn't be clearer. The ability to truly know a person isn't some innate talent you're born with.
Right.
It's a defined set of acquirable skills, mindsets, strategies, things you can actually hone through deliberate practice.
So he's rejecting that idea that some people are just naturally good with people and others aren't.
Completely. He says social adeptness isn't just a fixed personality trait. And he gives us this foundational framework, sort of a moral compass for every interaction. He divides people into two camps.
Illuminators and diminishers. I remember reading about this.
Exactly. Diminishers and illuminators.
And the diminisher, that's the person who's kind of self-absorbed, right?
Mm-hmm.
Quick to stereotype, quick to judge. Makes others feel small or invisible.
Yeah, they interrupt. They're just waiting for their turn to talk. They seem to prioritize performing over actually connecting. We've all met them.
Mm-hmm.
Sadly, yes.
But the illuminators, they're different. They're driven by this generous, non-judgmental curiosity.
Okay.
And they have the skills to draw people out, helping them articulate their own thoughts, their own feelings.
So they make people feel respected, understood.
And crucially, enlarged in their presence.
Yeah.
Brooks calls it a powerful, almost spiritual gift to be an illuminator.
Wow, enlarged. I like that. So the book is basically a training manual then, how to move from being a diminisher to an illuminator.
Pretty much. He starts by getting you to adopt the right internal posture. He diagnoses what he calls the crisis of invisibility.
A crisis of invisibility.
Yeah, this idea that people are just desperate to be seen beyond their job titles, their political labels, you know, all the stereotypes.
That feels very true.
And that's the core moral imperative he presents. Resisting that modern tendency to objectify people, to see them as just data points or simple categories.
Okay, so how do we resist that? What's the first step?
The first step, he argues, is cultivating intellectual humility.
Intellectual humility, meaning?
Meaning the recognition that your first impression of someone, it's almost always shallow, or maybe even flat out wrong.
Huh. But that sounds genuinely difficult. I mean, in a fast-paced world, we rely on shortcuts, don't we? Judging by clothes, accent, job title, just to process everyone we meet.
We do, yeah.
So if I have to approach every single interaction thinking, okay, I probably have this person wrong, there's so much more to learn, isn't that just a huge cognitive drain? It sounds exhausting.
It is a deliberate choice, absolutely. But Brooks argues it fundamentally changed the goal of the interaction.
How's that?
You stop being a judge, trying to figure them out instantly, and you start acting more like a fellow traveler.
A fellow traveler.
Yeah. And the key insight is people don't really want you to solve them. They mostly want loving attention, validation, not, you know, unsolicited advice rush at their pain.
Okay. I see the distinction you're drawing there. That makes sense. So we've got the internal mindset, intellectual humility, curiosity. Mm-hmm. But practically speaking, what are, say, the first three things I should stop doing?
Yeah.
And maybe start doing the minute I walk into a conversation. What are the core mechanics Brooks talks about?
Right, the mechanics. It starts with high quality attention.
Okay, high quality attention.
Brooks describes this as a powerful moral gift. It needs to be focused, patient, unwavering.
Which is hard today.
Incredibly hard. In our distracted, multitasking age, truly giving someone your full attention that communicates respect and value more powerfully than any complex compliment you could come up with.
Okay, attention is number one. What about the actual words we use?
Good question. This leads us to the really pivotal skill, asking great questions.
Ah, yes.
We have to move beyond the superficial stuff like, how are you?
Or what do you do?
Exactly. Brooks champions questions that invite storytelling, questions that explore motivations, touch on deeper values.
Can you give an example?
Sure. The best questions are never just about the facts. They're about the narrative. So instead of asking, what do you do for work? Maybe ask, what part of your work makes you feel most alive?
Well, that's different.
Or try something like, what crossroads are you at right now? Or even, tell me about a time you were transformed.
Oh, those are deep.
They are. The goal isn't to interrogate, it's to facilitate their self-expression. You're trying to make the other person the hero and the author of their own story in that moment.
Okay, that makes sense. Ask better questions.
Yeah.
So let's say I ask a great question and they actually launch into a deep story. What then? This is where the listening part comes in, right? And Brooks has a specific technique here.
He does. He really focuses on the discipline of listening. And the key technique he introduces is looping.
Looping? What's that?
It's where you actively repeat back what you heard, but in your own words.
Oh.
You use phrases like, so if I'm hearing you right, the anxiety you felt wasn't really about the outcome. It was more about the process itself.
Wait, that sounds kind of exhausting.
Yeah.
If I'm looping everything back, asking these deep questions, maintaining perfect attention, I feel like I'd be doing all the heavy lifting in the conversation.
Doesn't Brooks talk about, you know, reciprocity? Doesn't the other person need to do some work too?
He does address reciprocity, but he frames the effort differently. He argues that the effort is the gift.
Okay.
Looping isn't just about robotically repeating words. It's about signaling profound commitment to understanding.
Ah, I see.
It ensures mutual understanding, and crucially, it makes the speaker feel profoundly heard. And Brooks says, when you demonstrate that level of effort, the speaker almost always rewards it by opening up even further.
So it actually builds trust faster.
Exactly. He argues it's probably the most effective shortcut to building real trust. Okay, that reframes the whole interaction for me. It's not just technique. It's signaling commitment. Got it. So moving beyond just the surface conversation, Brooks challenges us to truly know a person by seeing them in, what does he call it? Four dimensions or 4D. What does it even mean beyond just small talk?
Right, 4D. It means we have to strive to see the whole person, not just their current status or the slice they present at first.
So what are the four dimensions?
Okay, so they are their past, you know, their formative experiences, where they came from, their present, their current struggles, joys, challenges, their future, their hopes, their fears, their aspirations, and finally, their inner depths.
Inner depths, like what?
Like their core values, their beliefs, maybe the longings of their soul, as Brooks puts it.
Right.
If you only know someone's present situation, you just have a flat portrait, right? Mm-hmm. He says you need all four dimensions to get a full dynamic picture of who they really are.
And I suppose knowing someone in 4D inevitably leads to complexity and probably disagreement at some point.
Absolutely, which is why Brooks addresses constructive disagreement head on.
Right. When conflict comes up, our diminisher instinct is usually to win the argument, right? To our point.
Definitely. But the Illuminator's goal, he argues, should be deeper understanding, not victory.
So how do we do that? How do we disagree constructively?
He advocates for looking for the question behind the conflict.
The question behind the conflict.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So if two people are arguing bitterly about, say, a political policy, chances are they are actually united by some shared fundamental moral inquiry underneath it all.
Like what?
Like, perhaps, what is the best way to care for the vulnerable in our society? They might have wildly different answers, but they're both wrestling with that same core question.
Okay.
By focusing on that shared moral question, the goal shifts. It's not about defeating the other person anymore. It's about understanding why they prioritize a different answer to that shared question. What experiences led them there?
But isn't that just a fancy way of saying agree to disagree?
Mm.
I mean, how does identifying a shared moral question actually help me if the other person fundamentally disagrees with my answer to it?
Right.
Does it resolve anything?
It might not resolve the policy dispute, no, but it transforms the relationship from antagonism to dialogue.
Ow.
It allows you to genuinely say, okay, look, we both clearly care deeply about creating a just society. We just have very different theories about how to get there.
Right.
When you understand the experience or the fear that drives their answer, you can start to respect the person, even if you still reject their argument.
That respect is the currency of connection.
Exactly. That respect is what keeps the door open for future understanding, or at least coexistence.
Okay, that makes sense. This brings us to what I found to be maybe the most profound and frankly humbling concept in the book, accompaniment.
Ah, yes, accompaniment.
When someone we care about is really suffering, you know, deep grief, serious illness, maybe a profound failure, our instinct often is to jump in with solutions, right?
Yeah.
Or maybe just cheerful platitudes. Look on the bright side.
Or have you tried? Yeah, we want to fix it.
And Brooks says that's precisely the wrong thing to do.
He does. That instinct to fix their pain, to make it go away quickly, that's the diminisher response. It often comes from our own discomfort with their suffering.
So what's the Illuminator response?
The true gift, the true act of love, he argues, is to simply be with them in their pain. Accompaniment.
Just be with them.
Yeah. It means listening without judgment, sitting in the dark with them, offering a steady, non-judgmental presence without trying to rush them out of what he calls the valley.
Wow.
It forces us to confront our own discomfort with silence, with helplessness, with pain that can't be easily fixed.
That is, yeah, that's a serious moral demand. It requires real presence. Okay, let's maybe step back for a second now and look at the key themes that really unify the book's purpose. What are the big takeaways?
Okay, I think the first core takeaway is that seeing is a moral and spiritual act. Brooks really elevates deep, non-judgmental attention. It's not just politeness. It's an act of love, a recognition of the inherent dignity in another person.
Which really challenges that sort of transactional view of connection, doesn't it? Like, we connect just to find people useful or interesting.
Completely. Second big theme, the idea that connection is a learnable skill. This is incredibly empowering, I think.
Yeah, I agree.
It means if you feel awkward or disconnected, it's not some fixed flaw in your personality. It's a discipline built on concrete, teachable skills like that looping technique or learning to frame those open-ended questions.
So it gives everyone agency,
yeah,
a path forward.
Exactly. Third, the primacy of curiosity over judgment. That intellectual humility we talked about, coupled with a genuine desire to be surprised by who the other person truly is,
yep,
those are the fundamental engines of deep connection.
So it's more important to be curious than, say, witty or smart or eloquent.
Brooks argues, yes, far more important. Curiosity fuels everything else.
Okay. And the last one.
And finally, that really powerful critique we just discussed, accompaniment over solving. Our culture really needs to shift, he argues, away from rushing towards quick fixes when faced with suffering. True care is presence. It's validation.
It's a powerful and, like you said, counterintuitive lesson in supportive behavior. Applies to every relationship, really.
Definitely.
You know, the book is just packed with memorable lines and insights. I think that first quote you mentioned really provides that clear choice framework. There are two kinds of people in the world, diminishers and illuminators. Illuminators are so interested in you, they make you feel seen and lit up.
Yeah, that's basically the litmus test for every interaction, isn't it? Are you draining the energy in the room or are you lighting people up?
Mm-hmm. And he also redefines what makes a great conversationalist. He says, a great conversationalist is a master of the art of the reveal. They ask the questions that help you discover your own opinions.
I love that. It's not about putting on a performance yourself.
No. It's about being a facilitator for someone else's self-expression.
Yeah.
Empowering them.
Right. And tying back to that idea of presence and suffering, probably the most emotionally resonant quote for me is this one. When you are with someone who is in a valley, your job is not to lead them out of it. Your job is to sit with them in it. Your job is to accompany.
Oof. Yeah. That quote alone.
Yeah.
It really could change how we show up for friends and family when they're going through a crisis.
It really could.
So, okay, this is all great in theory. How do we actually operationalize this stuff? What are some real-life applications we can use, like today, to start practicing these illuminator skills?
Good question. Let's make it concrete. Start maybe in the family setting. Try having deeper dinners.
Deeper dinners.
Yeah. Instead of just asking, how is your day? Which usually gets a one-word answer. Try changing the question.
Yeah.
Ask something like, what was a high point and a low point of your day? Or what did you learn today that surprised you?
Okay.
Yeah.
That shifts it from just rote recall to actual storytelling.
Exactly. Yeah. It invites that 4D perspective we talked about, past, present, future, depths.
Okay, makes sense for family. What about for leaders or managers in the workplace? How can they be illuminators?
Well, managers can consciously shift their focus from purely metrics to meaning.
How?
Instead of just reviewing the quarterly reports or KPIs, maybe take time to ask employees about their longer-term career aspirations. Ask them about their growth goals. Ask what makes their job feel meaningful to them.
So showing you see the whole person, their future, their inner depths, not just, you know, a set of outputs or tasks.
Precisely. That builds loyalty and engagement in a way metrics alone never can.
And then when dealing with really high-stakes conflict, whether it's civic stuff or maybe just a personal disagreement, that technique you mentioned earlier seems crucial.
Finding the question underneath the conflict? Yes, absolutely vital.
So how do you actually do that in the heat of the moment?
When you're engaging someone with really opposing views, instead of just jumping in to argue your points, try approaching them with genuine curiosity, even if it feels hard. Ask questions like, help me understand what life experiences led you to hold that view so strongly. Or maybe, what are you most afraid might happen if we don't take the action you're proposing?
So you're trying to understand their why.
Exactly. It transforms the dynamic from antagonism into a respectful, albeit maybe still challenging, dialogue. It de-escalates things.
You know, thinking back on all this, I think the most surprising takeaway for me personally was realizing that attention isn't just like a nice social courtesy we should offer.
Mm-hmm.
Brix frames it as a profound moral discipline, a conscious choice we make to recognize the sacred worth, maybe, of the person right there in front of us.
Yeah.
That hit me quite hard.
Yeah, that reframing is powerful. And for me, my final learning, or maybe the thing that clicked most, is the powerful feedback loop that's at play here.
A feedback loop.
Yeah. By practicing the skill of truly seeing others using that same curious, compassionate lens, Brooks describes we inevitably end up clarifying our own thoughts and values in the process.
Oh, interesting. How?
Because the act of drawing others out, of helping them articulate their story, it actually helps us discover more about ourselves, too. Our reactions, our assumptions, our own values become clearer.
So the work of social repair, maybe, really does begin with that individual, disciplined act of connection.
I think that's exactly his point. And maybe the most valuable lesson overall is just that. Meaningful connection isn't magic. It's a discipline. It's built on consistent practice. And ultimately, the quality of our lives is really determined by the quality of our attention.
The quality of our intention. That's a great place to leave it. See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Accotra Foundation.